Hey, I'm Lisa Whittle, and welcome to the Jesus Over Everything Show, affectionately known as Joe, where around here you will always hear honest conversations about life, faith, and true strength, courage, and love in the midst of our real everyday life. Doing something fun and exciting for the summer, airing the best of the best Joe from the past two seasons. That's right, we are bringing you the top 20 most listened to Joe shows of the past year, shows with some of my most amazing guests, therapists, Bible teachers, some of my close friends, talking about sex and spiritual abuse and how to have hard conversations and showing up when it's hard. Get ready, buckle up. Best of the best, top 20 Joe shows are here. Hey, thanks for showing up. I'm Lisa Whittle, and welcome to the Jesus Over Everything Show, affectionately known as Joe, where this season it is all about truth-telling, finding the good, and showing up for our lives today, no matter what has happened, even yesterday. Quickly, I've got a great Christmas gift idea for you if you're struggling to get something for someone. How about getting them a year or even lifetime subscription to Dwell, the incredible audio Bible app with customized reading plans, voices, translations. It's truly amazing. Head over to lisawhittle.com/dwell to get that as a gift to give someone or ask for it for yourself for Christmas. You can even try it out for 7 days to see if you like it. And remember, we have a 20% off partner discount through the show. Thank you to my partner, Dwell. Oh, I love this guest today. Andy Andrew is an incredible speaker, leader, and author of the book, Friendship, It's Complicated. And today we dive so deeply into the complexities of friendship, including what to do if you've been wounded by a friend, how to avoid the drama with other females, and how to develop that genuine connection with each other we all crave. And I even share my own friendship wounding, the very first I can remember at a young age. We all have them. And Andy and I have a really important discussion for all of us who deeply desire female friendships in this season of life. Listen now to our wonderful conversation. Andy, this is the first time you've been on Joe, and I've wanted you on for a while, so I'm glad that it finally worked out.
I am very honored to be on, because I have to say this to you. You send literally the best emails. I will never unsubscribe. So I unsubscribe from a lot, but I'm always excited to get yours in my inbox, and I can't wait to meet you in person one day, too. We have so many mutual friends. I so honor you and who you are, so thank you for having me.
Gosh, thank you. I appreciate that so much. Thank you. Remind me of your kids' ages. What are your kids' ages again?
So I've got 16, 14, 13, and 9. And those first three were born. It was three under the age of three. And that was when I had a breakdown. And, you know, the Lord healed my heart and mind. Because I've always said, you know, marriage shows you how selfish you are, but children show you how angry you are. And so I love my babies. They're amazing and huge now. But wow, that was a season. But they're phenomenal. And I love them.
Yes. When you have kids really close together like that, mine are too, it's really consuming. And, you know, my thought process was like, well, if I'm going to be doing this, if I'm going to be diapering or whatever, and of course, we can't always just say like, this is what I want. I wish that things would always work out that way, but it doesn't. But in your mind, you think, oh, I just want to just get all the diapering done at first, all that. But you don't think about things like, oh, they're going to all be in braces at the same time. Oh, they're going to all drive at the same time.
Yes. And for me, I'm like, wait, they're all going to graduate succinctly. Yes. Like it's starting to hit me. I'm like, this is going to happen real fast all of a sudden.
Yes, those things happen too. We had a wedding and a graduation within, 6 weeks of each other. No, not even that. 3 weeks of each other.
That's so many big milestones. Did you cry? Are you a crier or not really?
Well, Andy, it depends. Like seasons of my life, I am going through a crying stage actually in my life. I think how could you not cry when you are going through big changes. I think I've learned not to refuse the tears. That's probably I've probably had a lot bottled up in there for a while. So these are like ancient tears coming out. These are like those old musty tears coming out. You also live in New York City, which is glorious in the fall.
Yes, it is. It's my favorite place in the fall. It's so beautiful. And we always make sure we take a little trip to Central Park and play soccer, throw the frisbee on Sheep's Meadow and have a little picnic and get all of our favorite things just to enjoy, you know, the fallness of New York and see the, you know, the big city behind all these beautiful trees. So I love living here and walking through the streets of Brooklyn where, and this is a little fun note too about living in New York. My eldest three ride the subway to school, which always gives a lot of parents heart attacks, but they're phenomenal and it's normal. All of them do. My littlest, I walk him to school still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think New York for people, New York City, especially for people that haven't ever been there or, you know, they've just seen it in movies or in pictures or books or whatever. It's sort of this anomaly, right? Like it's, and for me, I live on the East Coast, so it's a New York flight is like an hour and 20 minute flight. So it's kind of our, hey, you know, if we're going to celebrate something really big or a milestone or whatever, let's go to New York City because we really love it. It's a really cool place. We did go there at Christmas, though, I'll say one time. And that was a whole thing because I don't enjoy crowds as much. And so, I mean, like it was, I couldn't even walk. I don't know. It was a little uncomfortable.
Everyone, like in the movies, seeing the Rockefeller tree, you have all this space. You don't have any space. And seeing all the windows on Fifth Ave, you're like, get out of my way.
Well, speaking of seasons, okay, so what does the season of life look like for you? Like, okay, life is hard for everyone right now. What would you say? This is Andy's real life. Here's some of the heart of it, and here's some of the good of it.
Gosh. Okay, we'll start with the heart of it. The heart of it would be, I mean, we've just pastored in this city that feels like it has been like a bloody battlefield. Pastoring and leading through the tension and the polarization and the highs and the lows and the lockdowns and the everything. And I think I have been battered in a way that I just wasn't expecting because I love this city and love her people and love the people we're called to. But I probably, my pride, my my leadership, my mental health has like really struggled over these last couple of years. I have been doing the work to walk in healing and wholeness. So that's like a positive side of it that has come out of it. But I think leading through these times where you, like I said, you really love a city you're called to. And then it just feels like the city and the people that you are called to have been bringing pain or question everything and you just can't do anything right. And so I think getting to a place where I'm like, wow, I guess truly, 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 I have to be in a place, not just while I'm leading, but living where it's not just a hashtag to say, you know, just, you know, audience one, but like truly, God, what do you want us to do in this season? I want to please you because I can't please one single person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's been hard and good. And then the beauty that has come out of this season have been, as much as I know now that I for sure am not called to homeschool my kids because of having them home with us in lockdown. I just think that I had this realization. I'm like, ooh, Lord, teach us to number our days. Like, I mean, it makes me emotional. Like, I can't believe I got this time with my kids at home. And so many revolutionary things happened in our relationship with them over the lockdown. I know some parents were like, get me out of here, get my kids out of here. But I like really weirdly treasured it. And now they're back in. And I would say my marriage has gotten stronger because of it. And also just like some of my friendships and relationships have truly deepened over this year. So I think, you know, realizing that this year has brought the good and the bad in my own self, I've seen, gosh, I see the areas of my life and my relationship with Jesus that were built on the sand and those things that were built on the rock. But also, I think we have seen that within the church, the greater church, man, there were people that I thought were solid followers of Jesus where I was like, I didn't realize your foundation was built on the sand. And that's really hard to see. There's been more, you know what I mean? More grief and loss than I knew I could handle. But I think it's also just shown us the deep need for true discipleship and community and love and relationship that we really, really need at this time that is rooted in Christ. So there's been, you know, a lot. And I know we've all had a lot of roller coasters that we've gone on. So I think I just said a lot, but I hope that that was helpful.
Yeah, no, I think in what you said, there's an element of something that you said that everyone can grab onto and say, yep, I relate to that. And that very much has also touched my life. One of the things that I've felt throughout, or as maybe as a result, because it's been weird, you know, like every calendar year we always say, oh, you know, this next year, this is the year, I have so much hope. And by the way, that didn't just happen in 2021. Like that, I watched that happen in 2017 and 2018 and 2019. Like every year we have this belief somewhere deep inside. And part of it's good, right? That God can do a new thing. Like, so there's some value there, but also it's sort of this continued human deal where we're like, oh, the new calendar, it's going to be fresh. It's going to be like as if we're going to shed some kind of human skin, right? It's like as if this world is going to stop being worldly, you know? And it's like, actually, no. But what I felt is that 2020, I think people, and stick with me through this whole statement, because the first part people are like, what? But 2020, to me, it didn't wreck us. It exposed us in the biggest way. So people that have lost would be like, Lisa, I don't know. It did wreck me. Yes, I do think there's a level, of course, of wreck, and reckoning. But I also think it was the exposure. It exposed what we already felt about God, believed, our fears, all that. Anyway, we could go into, like, I have a feeling you and I could just ping pong and go into like this whole, we could both be preaching for hours. But one of the things I like about you, Andy, is that you go hard after God. And I like a girlfriend who goes hard after God. When did you fall in love with Jesus?
I was 19 years old, and I kind of have a wild story that I don't know if I'll ever put pen to paper for this part, because it's a lot of my parents' story, but I grew up in a cult. So that's like a whole thing that we could, you know, expand on. And people hear that word and go, what does that mean? But so I really walked away from God and kept my heart far from him, but always sensed and felt and knew his presence and protection. But at 19, I remember my parents had left everything that we grew up in and walked into this little church in Spokane, Washington on a hill. And they were playing the song by Delirious. They were worshiping and singing, I Could Sing of Your Love Forever. Mm. And I walked in and just started sobbing. And the tangible presence of God hit me. And it was like, I went, this is the love that I've been looking for my whole life. And I remember the person who was speaking said, if you want to give your life to Jesus, raise your hand. And I remember just running to the front. And I was like the awkward person that ran up there like, security. But there was this insatiable hunger for what was true and what was real. And honestly, I was one of those 180 degree stories. Like when Jesus wrecked my life and came into it, I wanted nothing else. And so it has just been this passionate love pursuit and affair with Jesus. And I don't know where I'd be without him. Like, actually, I don't know if I'd be alive without him. And so, yeah, that was when I was 19 in 1998. So I'm telling everyone my age, if you're really good at math.
That is amazing. I love that so much. Oh man. You know, it's weird. I relate to, even though I was born into the church, like my longest love relationship has been with the church besides my one with Jesus. But it's weird because I relate to these stories where people say, you know, I was brought up in this different situation. Maybe I was the person that ended up in like a rehab facility or whatever. I relate to that person who says, you know, I don't know if I'd be alive without Jesus. Like, I feel the same way. Sure, I was brought up in what others might consider this very air conditioned faith. But for me, Andy, it's like, I'm a wild person. I'm a wild animal. Like, I have rebellion in my DNA to a degree. And I think that's why I run so hard after God, is because I know that if I don't run that way, I run the other way. I've lived that way. And so I love that story. Okay, I want to dive right in talking about friendship, because, okay, first of all, when I say that, women, please do not turn this off. Do not go anywhere if you have feelings about this. If you are struggling with friendship right now, please listen, because literally my goal in doing this show is to honestly help us who are dealing with tough things with friends. And I know that was the goal. I know it had to have been at least one of your goals in writing your book, Friendship, It's Complicated. First of all, and you kind of answered this in the way you answered a question that I asked you right at first about, I think that the past few years especially maybe, has been hard on friendships. Now, you were saying, like, I feel like my friendships have been strengthened, which I could see that as well. But I'm thinking quarantine-wise, it's been hard to get together. Politically, we've been divided. Social issues, all of that. How have you seen the last couple of years taken a toll on friendships, maybe even friendships that were already kind of hard?
Yeah, I think that for me, no, it's been completely polarizing in my friendships. So when I, even like the fact that, yes, I've had friendships that have deepened and grown richer, but at the same time, I have had friendships that I've had to grieve the loss of, because it was almost like, was it the, whether it was political or, you know, whatever, put the frustration of the last couple of years and the pain of the last 2 years in the middle of it. That there has been division and polarization in such a way that I'm like, I don't know that these two ends can ever meet again. And actually walking through the process of grief to let go of those things has been very, very difficult. And I feel everything, which I hate sometimes. Like, but I am, so when I was like, are you a crier? I'm such a crier. I cry when I'm happy. I cry when I'm sad. I cry when I'm like, you know what I mean? And so I think for me, like it has been, it's been really rough. It's been difficult. So
Yeah, absolutely. All of the above, all of the things, I think for all of us in some way, it's been tough. And then also strengthening. I mean, this is hard and good. It's like our whole life, right? Like we've had some friendships strengthened, some that have been broken, some that we've realized maybe needed to go for a while, you know, again, exposed, you know, in some ways. And God in the center of it all. I mean, you know, and like that, I think that's made me so grateful that for that foundation and that rock, and the friendship that in him that doesn't go away. You wrote this book called Friendship, It's Complicated. And okay, so I really appreciate that you address two types of people right off the bat, the skeptic and the wounded. Because honestly, I think for so many of us as women, and I'm going to put myself in this category because I've been both of those women. But the idea of help with our friendship, it appeals to us. Like there's a place inside of us that says, I know I need help with this. But there's a large place inside of us as well that even resists the idea because of our wounding, because of our skepticism, because of our past, that this area of our life can actually ever really change, because we know that we can't control what other people do. And so we walk around feeling like, I don't know if she's for me. I don't know if it's okay, because female friendships are really hard. So what do we do when we know we can't control someone else? And like, we don't have the x-ray vision to know if they're really for us. So maybe I'm speaking as the skeptic and the wounded who says, what do I do?
Well, yeah, I think one of the major things that I felt the Holy Spirit say to me as I was personally walking this through, because I don't like to write anything, and I know you're the same, that you don't live. Like, I don't want this to be head knowledge. I want this to be lived knowledge. And I think for me, the Holy Spirit said to me, hey, Andy, you are the common denominator in every relationship that you're in. And I was like, dang, that is like so confronting and makes me a little bit mad, but also really hopeful and helpful that I actually have to face myself and walk in healing with Jesus in every relationship I'm in, friendship, marriage, with my children, with my parents, anywhere, to be able to bring my whole self to the table. And I think that once we understand that, and we do let go of a little bit of control, but there are so many elements to this, because I mean, for me, this whole book even came out of about 5 years ago, watching all of these relationships like burn to the ground around me with other women. And I'm like pastoring and leading and thinking like, I'm in my late 30s. I totally should have it together. But I feel like a child who doesn't know how to make a friend. And so that's kind of when the Lord spoke to me, you're the common denominator. And I had to go back to move forward. The first chapter in this book is called The Woman Wound. And I go there about our relationship with our mothers, because we often talk about our relationship with our fathers, but I realize realized a lot of the issues that I had, and I've got a redeemed relationship with my mom. So she let me write about this because we openly talk about this, is that I realized I learned a lot of codependency from my relationship with her. So I would, from a young age, be her emotional mother. And she opened up to me about stuff that was completely inappropriate for me to know or fix or carry. And so fast forward into adult relationships, guess what I got really good at? Like letting me be, I would just carry other people's stuff for them. And then I would be the person who they would blame for everything. They had no boundaries or they just didn't own their own life. And so because that was what I grew up learning to do. And so when, you know, even my best friend at 20 plus years, who we're still friends now, that was a tipping point for me, is when I had all of these female friends burned to the ground. And then the final straw was my best friend of 20, known her longer than my husband. And she goes, you know what? It's unhealthy what you're doing. And you're not listening to me. Like I told you, these people are going to burn you. They want something from you. They're going to betray you, but you don't listen to wisdom. So until you want to take care of basically your addictive behaviors in relationships and your codependencies, like I'm just going to be over here waiting for you. And that's when I started to go, wow, like I've got to get better at this. And I have a hope. Like, I'm like, gosh, like I know we can do this. I can do this. But I had to really face myself first before I could really start to integrate and start cultivating healthy relationships with other women.
That's really powerful. That's really, really powerful. I appreciate it so much. And I think I don't know if we really realize as women, I think we do somewhere deep down inside, but I want us really to soak in what you're saying, because female friendships have marked us so deeply. I mean, in ways, female relationships, in ways that we can't even put into words. Like it's marked every aspect of our lives and our belief systems and our relationship, even that we might then have with our husbands. I mean, it's marked everything, the way we feel about ourselves. It is so, so important. You know, you were talking about female wounding, and I love that you opened up right away talking about that, because I do think that's the first thing that has to be addressed. So it's super wise for you to do that right away. I also love that you shared your story of that first female wounding at recess with your best friend not wanting to play with you. I mean, all of us can relate to that in some way. And so what I did was, I'm sure something that you hope the reader will do, and that is immediately try to think of your own. And so I thought back and I thought, okay, what was yours, Lisa? And I think mine was my two best friends who I walked up on talking about me behind my back, which, Andy, I mean, honestly, it speaks so much into my whole personality and my whole life of my fear of being betrayed and misunderstood and broken trust, and my like historical life of dealing with trust issues, which I've been very open about in, you know, books and like talking about, because for me, there's kind of always been this fear with women of like, when are you going to betray me? Because at some point you're going to. I get it. Like you will. When is it going to be? Like, how long is this run going to go? How long will we get to enjoy this before I find out that you're not really my friend? And so that's a hard way to go your whole life with friendships. It also reminded me of my own commitment to loyalty with people. And so one thing that's been hard for me is, I feel like I'm in therapy, but one thing that's been hard for me, Andy, honestly, is because I am a loyal friend and, you know, I go to the grave. I will go to the grave with so many people's stories and so forth, because I take it really seriously. That one thing that's hard for a person like that is to then realize, like, well, I would do that for you. Why wouldn't you do it for me? Right? Do you think, so I'm getting to a question. Do you think the thing that maybe we value the most in friendships could be something that we didn't get in another woman at some point and we wanted so much?
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's like you said, that's kind of where I start there too. Because even in chapter one, I said, we all have unmet needs from childhood because we all have imperfect human parents. And in adulthood, we have to become aware of how we are trying to meet those needs in healthy or unhealthy ways. And I think even as you were talking, first of all, thank you for sharing what you shared, because I think it's so valuable for other women to hear that they're not alone. And I like that loyal side of things, or wondering, because I did the same thing, going around the corner, who's going to betray me next? I mean, that's why why one of the chapters is all about navigating betrayal and taking care of your own heart and how to do that well. But what I have realized throughout the years is it all comes down to our unmet needs, but also our belief systems that we have cultivated. And I want to just share something really quickly that I got in counseling that did deeply change my life that I want to give away for free because I use it all the time. And it's that we all have wounding. And from those wounds, when a wound happens, whether you're a child or it was yesterday, the enemy loves to come in and tell us a lie. Jesus is also there to tell us the truth, but often the lie seems to be louder and we take hold of that. And when we believe the lie about the wounding, that's when we create a belief system, often a false belief system because it's based on a lie. And from that false belief, we build a stronghold around ourselves, whether that is self-protection by, you know, anger or manipulation or control, whatever that is, we build this stronghold. And from that little stronghold, even though God is our strong tower and he's our shelter and the one we should run to, we build our own. And from that place, we say vows. We say things like, I'll never trust another woman again. I'll never trust the church again. And we go on and on. And from there, we live from a false self. So what the Lord, I believe, is trying to do in all of us is bring us back to who we are created in him so that we can bring our whole selves to the table in any relationship we're in, including friendship. So what we can do at any time is go to any wound that we have and go, God, what is the truth about that wound? And what false beliefs do I have? And what is the truth about what belief system do I need to replace that with? How have I been protecting myself and repent of that? And also renounce the vows that we have operated from so that we can stand up and be our true self in any relationship we're in. And so that's kind of like, I know that's a major journey, but the major journey of the book takes us from the woman wound all the way to becoming spiritual midwives, where we are so confident in who we are that even if someone betrays us, we're all about running in the Great Commission, birthing the dreams of others, you know? And so even though, you know, betrayal will still happen again, we have to navigate those waters. And I hate that that's true because we're down on this broken world and trying to bring Jesus into every nook and cranny. So was that helpful? That was a lot. I know I just said a lot.
No, it was great. And it, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about a couple of things. I was thinking about how this manifests for different people with different personality types, you know, in our different personality types. A lot of it, I do think, still goes back to this idea of, will my friendships be real? You know, how can I ensure that? Right. So that might not be what we think we're really asking, but a lot of the times it is, because if you think about, okay, so for some people, it's people pleasing. It's this chronic people pleasing of, you know, I'm just going to say yes to everything. But really what's at the core of that is for a lot of women is because I don't want my female friends to not ask me to do things anymore, not, you know, not think I'm valuable to them, not invite me, not love me, whatever the case may be, right? So for me, it's not so much that, because I don't deal with people pleasing that way. But for me, it's being misunderstood. So it's always like, how can I make sure that I explain who I am to you so that you know, so that if someone ever tells you any different, you actually know who I am. Yeah, it's great. I place this high value on people really knowing me, but I also have lived scared a lot to where that somebody might not know me and, oh, God forbid they would actually talk about me and not know who I am. And then trying to put out all those forest fires, which is a very exhausting process, right? And at the end of all of that, it is not having the belief that God will vindicate, God will be your advocate, you know, God is enough in your friendships, all of those kinds of things, whether it's people pleasing or over explaining or whatever the case may be. So I don't know. That's a whole nother a lot that I just added to that. But I hope for somebody that's been helpful. You know, your subtitle is Avoid the Drama, Create Authentic Connection, and Fulfill Your Purpose Together. Okay, so I want to break this down and go down the list. First of all, can you actually avoid the drama? And how is that possible?
I mean, we live in a fallen world, so no, it's going to be there. But to the extent that you can, like there's a whole chapter about breaking up with drama. And I think for me, that has to do with, to the best of your ability, you have got to break up the drama in your own mind, in your head, first and foremost. And sometimes you do have to put boundaries up with the drama that's around you. So there's the drama that we create in and of ourselves, in our mind, or the things that we start around us, or the things that we find ourselves in. We have to get get good at discerning which is which. And I think for me, I mean, I just joke around. Like I one time downloaded the Who Unfollowed Me on Instagram app, which was the stupidest thing to do.
Oh, Andy, that's just asking for pain, right?
Well, and because my husband, all logical, he goes, I do it so I know who to unfollow. And I'm like, wow, that's so logical. For me, this is completely emotional. Like who would unfollow me? And so I realized it's drama like that where, and that's why it has to come back to us understanding our tendencies so that we can heal before Jesus and not blame it on anybody else or project that on anybody else or ask someone to meet a need that they can't. That's like the sort of drama that we can do before God. But then the drama that's around us that is like, I mean, just go get Dr. Cloud and Townsend, go ahead and read my book too. But yeah. About boundaries and safe people and the circles that you have. Like even Jesus had, like he had the 3, 12 and the 72 and the multitudes. Like even Jesus had 3 that he took into vulnerable spaces, 12 that he was on mission with, 72 that he sent out. Like there is a need for different spheres in your life. And so avoiding the drama in a way like comes down to like, no, you are not available for everyone. No, you are not laying down for everyone. No, you are. You know what I mean? We have to get good at those things. So can you completely avoid it? Absolutely not. Because the world is crazy, but to the best of our ability, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think we can't avoid other people's drama, but what we can do is we can avoid the drama in our own life. And that's what I think you make a really good case for in the book. And, you know, because the things that are within our control, i.e. under the leadership of the Holy Spirit, it's great because there is that ability. And I love that God gave us the free will to be able to exercise, you know, all of these things that he gives us the power and the ability to be able to do that we in our flesh could not be able to do. So while we can't control that other person over there that's going rogue, there is a lot of drama that we can avoid that honestly we do walk into sometimes, that we do facilitate, put up with, whatever the case may be. And I love, because I know you bring godly parameters into it in the book, and that I really appreciate, rather than just saying, just walk away from everybody that you don't like. That's not the answer. But the answer is these really, really wise, boundaried choices that we have the ability to make. Okay, now I want to talk about creating authentic connection. In the book, you talk about how we have to move past self-preservation if we really want to get anywhere. Now, I have to tell you that a lot of my life has been based around how can I self-protect? I mean, that is really part of someone's MO when they don't want to be misunderstood. Like I was just saying, I mean, it's like a proactive strategy of, you know, helping yourself, although it's really exhausting. So how in the world does someone, especially someone who has been betrayed before, move past this to get to this authentic connection that we crave?
Yeah, well, I mean, I say this in the book, self-preservation is willfully choosing the pain of isolation over the potential of messy, godly connection. And I think that self-preservation is as old as the garden, right? I mean, when they covered themselves up with fig leaves, they're like, I know how to do this better than you, God. I mean, honestly, it just comes down to pride for all of us because we all self-preserve and we all do it in different ways. And so what we have to do is, like you said, we have to be able to move past that. But that's why, like, even the whole first part of this book is called Facing Yourself. Like, it's all about healing. And that's a continual journey because the more you're in relationship with other people, the more you realize how much healing you need. Because relationships with other people are just messy and imperfect. And so we have to get good at, I had a friend say, asking yourself, is this just drama or is it trauma? When you're trying to intentionally make connection with other people, is this drama that's happening because, you know, connection with other people is just messy and unperfect, and this is just what it looks like to walk out relationship in godly community? Or is this trauma from my past that I need healing in? And I think what we have to understand is when we are trying to be intentional in relationships, you do have to understand that not everything's going to work out and there will be betrayal again. And the reason why being in godly community is so important, being in a church, being with other people, whatever that looks like in your context, to be a part of the body of Christ, is that is where we choose to mature. You can't forgive people if you don't have anybody to forgive. If you are isolating, you're raging against all wise judgment anyways. This is what Proverbs tells us, because when you're alone, you're always right. But when you're with other people, your pride, your desire to self-preserve, your desire to take care of your own, it's always challenged. And so your pride gets laid down and you choose to forgive and walk in grace and humility with other people. So it is definitely not easy, but it is the way and what we are called to as a people. So
yes, absolutely. Well, okay. So I have feelings about the phrase better together, because I do think, I'm sure you could guess why, I do think it's one of those t-shirt sayings, one of those bumper sticker sayings that we want to be true and it sounds fantastic. But Andy, we don't always mean it. And we definitely do not always exercise it. I've had my very dear girlfriend, Jo Saxton, on here talking about this very thing, about how we say there's room at the table, blah, blah, blah. And I think there's a part of us that really want this to be true. I also don't think it's always true. So how do we lead out in making room for other women? Because I do believe better together. I mean, it's gospel. It is absolutely biblical. But how do we lead out in making room for other women, especially in a culture where it feels very exclusive?
I love that. It's so I love that you said that, because I totally wrote that in the book. I was like, listen, I can't stand the better together thing either. I'm like, don't just wear it on a t-shirt. Don't wear the t-shirt if you're not willing to do it. So I have this whole conversation about it. Yep. But I think the way that we cultivate actually better together and cultivating a space for others is that we have to get good at going first. My mentor, mother in the faith, Maria D'Urso, this is a woman who, when she was born, her mother died and she was abandoned and abused in a nunnery and by other women, and then got saved in, you know, the hippie times and revolution. And she had no mothers in the faith, no one that cared for her, no one that discipled her. But this woman is a mother in the faith. This woman makes room for other women. This one, she calls me once a week with, she's like, oh, Andy, I've been praying for you. I have a prophetic. And I'm just like, who even are you? Like, but you know what? I asked her this once. I was like, how do you do this? Because you could, like, you have every excuse to be wounded by women. No one ever cared for you or led out. She goes, I just choose to go first and give to other people what I always needed. And I think a lot of times what we're doing is we're waiting for someone else to do better together for us, when we actually are powerful enough and loved enough by God to be the person who creates a table that other people can sit at. And so I'm saying that really simply. That's really difficult to do, because there's a lot of elements to that. But I think that that's where we have to get better. And we have to do that individually and corporately and just make space for other people and not wait for someone else to do it for us.
I mean, I so agree. I mean, I do think it's tough sometimes to go first, but I also do think, and I realize I'm coming from a personality that is a bolder personality. I get that. Like I leave room for the fact that some people, it's not in their natural, but you have to also understand that, one, I'm also a woman who likes to be invited. So there's a part of my own personality that's like, well, I don't want to be the one to step out. And it's not because I'm not bold enough to do it. It's because I don't want to put my neck out there. So there's that too. So it's there. All of us have our reasons for not wanting to go first, whether we have, you know, been hurt by doing that and sticking your neck out and then somebody doesn't reciprocate, or, you know, whatever our reasons may be, we're more shy, whatever. I'm actually an introvert, so there's also that whole dynamic. But I do think it's really important, because I do think one of the things we do with female friendships is we just wait on somebody else to do and be everything that we want and need. And it's somebody has to be the one. I mean, in The Hard Good, I was thinking about this, in The Hard Good, I talk about the power of first apology. And, you know, for me, and the reason why I wrote this is because I thought about in my own life how going along with an apology, like, you know, someone apologizes to me, Andy, and says, hey, you know, Elisa, I really want to apologize. And then I say, oh yeah, me too. I want to, it's a different vibe than when I am convicted and I know that I need to offer one to someone. Let's say we're in an impasse relationship and we both kind of done something to contribute. And I know that I've got to stick my neck out, make the first move and do it. Like, there's a different leadership in that. And, but especially if someone really isn't seeming like they're too interested in this whole situation, right? And so, you know, what would you say to somebody that says, my girlfriend's hurt me, and yeah, I've got some culpability in it too, but I mean, I feel like she owes me an apology, and I don't really feel that warm to her, but you know, should I still step out? What should I do?
I think, it's funny, even as you're talking, it's almost like I keep hearing the Holy Spirit's like, humility is the key here, which is so frustrating and so aggravating, because I don't know about you, but I love to win an argument and I love to be right. Sure. And I wish that wasn't the case. I think there's a few elements to this. You cannot, I mean, I love the quote that you posted the other day. I never knew how strong I was until I had to forgive someone who wasn't sorry and accept an apology I never received. I was like, oh. And I think that right there does show strength. It shows humility to be able to go, you know what? I think in a way, even if we never have a DTR conversation, the relationship just got defined, because it is no longer a safe environment on one side or the other. I think that's what I've learned, is that even my close friend, Tanya, who I write about, and she's the one that was like, I'm not going to have anything to do until you like deal with some of your issues. That really hurt. But at the same time, it was a wound from a friend, and I could have cut her off, but we decided to go back in. So there has to be reciprocity to move forward in a relationship. But honestly, I mean, forgive, you can't go wrong forgiving and letting someone go. It actually does free your mind. And I just have a song in my head and I want to sing, free your mind and the world. Do you get songs in your head as well? So yeah, I don't know if that made like a lot of sense, but you just can't go wrong for walking in humility and forgiving. And sometimes, again, it's Dr. Cloud and Henry Townsend of how, I don't know if you read the book Necessary Endings. Such a hard, good plug, but for real, like such a beautiful and difficult book, but also brings so much resolve to when it is time to have a necessary ending in any type of thing, a season, a relationship. And so that may be the case too.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my goodness. Yes, yes, yes. And Andy just sung for us. So amazing. All right. Okay. Let's do a few rapid fire questions before we end this. First of all, and just whatever quick comes to your mind, kind of friend you are drawn to yourself.
I'm actually drawn to a very truth teller, loving friend. So I tend to be super, I'm like very tenderhearted, but very truthful. Like I love to tell the truth and I love the truth. But I love someone who will also kick my butt and remind me. So I love the strong, hardcore. Some of them would be eights on the Enneagram if people do Enneagram. Like I love eights on the Enneagram. They've been some of my closest friends. So.
Oh, good. I qualify. Yay. Okay. Yay. All right. Favorite season?
Oh, I am a cheesy lady. I do love fall. Like it is, it's magical. It just brings me back to my dad raking all the leaves in our backyard when we had a backyard and us jumping off of the trees and into them, the smell of the leaves. I don't know. It's just my favorite.
Oh my gosh. If you don't love fall, I don't know if we can even be friends, because fall is the best season there is. Fall is the best. Is it even debatable? I don't think so. Favorite New York City junk food?
Oh, honestly, I have a real issue. Like I live on this street between two of the best pizza places in New York. Like my block is right between them, and pizza and bagels. So everything bagels toasted with cream cheese, both of those things are my cheat food to the max. Like I love them so much. They're so delicious.
And they're not overrated in the city. They're not like people, if you the stereotype, like New York City bagels, New York City pizza. No, it's actually true. It's actually amazing.
It is. And you can go to like a dirty bodega and you're like, why is this so delicious? And I go to other cities and I'm like, your pizza and your bagels are not good. Like it's just good here. It just is.
Not good at all. You're exactly right. Something that makes you laugh.
Oh my gosh. Physical humor. I die. Like
balls falling.
Yes. Falling? Physical humor. And even just like, I'm like that person. I love watching like AFV and Vines with my kids on, and I cry. I laugh so hard, and I'll uncomfortably laugh if one of my kids like falls in a funny way and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be holding you right now, but that was really funny.
I so relate to this. That's the same. Like, I'm not a big laugh out loud person unless, like, my kids say I'm unimpressible. So if that tells you anything about me. So I know I'm not really proud of that, but it has to be like very hilarious for me to get a real, like, super big laugh out of me. I love sarcasm. Like, that's the kind of laugh that you get out of me if someone's really sarcastic. But the other thing is, if someone like falls, especially if someone kind of makes fun of me. So my middle son makes fun of me because I tend to do things like this. We have several whole jokes about when I've fallen or whatever. But for a long span of time, when my son was in high school, my middle son, I like fell off my heel one time. I actually went through a phase of falling off my wedge heels. And so he would make fun of me. And so I would actually ask him if I was ever like needing a little pick me up or I was in a bad mood, or I was like, Micah, can you imitate me falling off my heel? And so he would go out of the room. He'd come in the room and he'd be like, hi, I'm Lisa Whittle. And then he'd like fall off. I know it sounds so dumb, but for me, physical comedy too is like the best. Okay. That was way too long of a story, but you get what I'm saying. All right. Friendship with anyone dead or alive.
Friendship with anyone dead or alive. You know who I really want to talk to, and I doubt we'd be friends, but I just want to chat with them, is the Queen of England. Because you know, when you watch The Crown, I'm like, man, you've been through a lot. Like World War II, you're still alive. Like, and if any of this is even close to true, like, how are you still smiling when the cameras are on you? I just want to know. I just want to know
who
you made it.
Yeah. You might be weird friends. Like, you might be that obscure weird friends if you guys did talk.
I'll let you come in.
I always think that about people. I'm like, I think if we met, we might be friends. I know we'd be weird. I like people that are very offbeat and different from me. So who knows? I might. Anyway. All right, friend. This has been amazing. I've loved having you on. Here's my last question. And I ask it of every single guest that's on the Jesus Over Everything show. What is the last thing you would say about Jesus if you could only say one more thing?
I think for me, he has been the safest place that I have ever known. And he has always received all of me. And I could just curl up in a ball and cry right now in his presence. I'm so grateful for that.
Oh, safest place. I really, really, really relate to that. Thank you so much, Andy, for being on. It's been my joy. Thank you for this offering of this book about friendships that we really all need. We really, really all as women, we need this book so much. So thank you, and just for your heart and for loving Jesus, and just, I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. Would you love to know how to show up for your life again after the hard things you've been through? My new book and Bible study, The Hard Good, helps you know how to do that. So head to lisawhittle.com/good to start reading chapter 1 for free right now.